On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I react to the news of the Nets hiring Amari Stoudemire, plus we begin our breakdown of Caris LeVert's season. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, as always, the Amari Stoudemire to my Steve Nash, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's up, man?
I'm good, Josh. Just find me rolling to the basket, and I'll put it in the hoop. You know, that's what this dynamic is.
Is Gavin our Matrix, Sean Marion?
Yeah, he's a little funky, he's a little weird, but ultimately he does get the job done. So yeah, that's a good comp.
I love it. I'll have to, we'll shoot him a text and let him know the good news. But of course, making that reference, not only because Steve Nash is the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, which you guys all know, but big news for the Nets coaching staff this week. I have no idea how actually impactful this will be, but interesting news that Amari Stoudemire has joined the coaching ranks in the Nets coaching tree there. So we'll get into that a little bit. And then coming up, we'll do our player preview on Caris LeVert, one of the juicier ones, I think, that we will be able to dive into and talk about his regular season, his bubble performance, him trying to salvage something from the Nets playoff series against the Toronto Raptors, where he was basically trying to climb up a impossibly steep mountain pretty much by himself. So we'll get into that. But Marcus, Amari news, all right. First, reaction, what are you thinking?
I was not surprised was my first reaction because of the rumor that, you know, Nash had reached out to Rajah Bell about a job. He reached out to Dirk Nowitzki about a job. So it seemed like he was just kind of going down his contacts list and his phone and just like, okay, next up's Amari. So I wasn't surprised that he hired a former player. I was a little bit surprised that it was Amari just because I thought he was like still playing in Israel, like up until very recently. So that was a little bit surprising. He doesn't really have any coaching experience, which neither does Nash. He's just kind of another guy who brings that pedigree and respect of being like once a great player. So I'm sure that the guys on the team will listen to him and respect his opinions and stuff. It's just really TBD on like what he can actually bring because like we said, we haven't really seen either of these guys in any kind of coaching role. So yeah, my biggest takeaway was not too surprised, but we'll have to see how it plays out. What did you think, Josh?
Yeah, well, to your point, it looks like Nash is basically going in alphabetical order by last name. So he first started with Rajah Bell, then Nowitzki. Now he's down in the S's to Stoudemire. So maybe can someone do a check on all of his former teammates to see who he's going to be reaching out to next?
Yeah, Pat Burke got snubbed.
I know, really, he really did. Really did. But I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, you know, Amari, to your point, was playing for Maccabi Tel Aviv this year. He was mentoring Avdija, who teammates this year, which feels very weird to me because, Denny's going to get drafted this year, and Amari was drafted in like 2002. just a big gap there. But I like it. I think, obviously, you have another guy in Amari who, you know, was a supremely talented player from like a physical gift standpoint, which I think is an interesting mesh with Nash, who like, you know, a lot of the reasons people say star players can't be good coaches is because they have all those physical gifts and like they didn't just necessarily like they hone their craft, obviously, but they don't know what it's like to be like a role player. And obviously Nash does know that, but you just have another guy in Amari who can relate to what some of the star players on this team are going through. You have a lot of guys that have battled injuries, which Amari certainly did especially earlier on in his career. And I feel like he's going to be a great mentor for Claxton. That's who I'm really excited about in all of this.
Yeah, that's a good call. I was trying to think who he would mentor because, like, you would think KD is going to be like the starting four probably. And yeah. He doesn't really need like mentorship at this point.
Neither does DeAndre.
No, yeah. So, if Jared Allen is still on the roster, maybe he can, you know, give him some tips about rolling hard and kind of improving his hands when he catches passes. But Claxton's a great call. I honestly have forgotten about him, but that's a really good comp. I mean, we've talked about Claxton kind of being sort of Chris Bosch-like at times, another like versatile lefty big. So Amari kind of similar skill set to both of those guys. Didn't quite extend his range to three, just with the timing of when his career was. But that's definitely a good role model for Claxton, I think.
Yeah, and especially like if you just look at the Jared Allen of everything, I think it makes a lot of sense because you have like him and Amari are obviously very different players. Amari's just like a much more, I think, explosive athlete, much more dynamic offensive player. But Amari, obviously, you know, incredible rim runner, start of his career and mid into his career. But he really transformed himself, I think, later Suns years and then with the Knicks, where he just became a dead-eye mid-range shooter. And that's a much less important part of today's game. You're not really going to want Jared Allen taking a ton of mid-range shots. But if he can just help him with, like, touch and shooting even a little bit, that could actually go a pretty long way. Because Amari was, you know, knocked down from 18 to 20 feet at the end of his career.
Yeah, to your point, that is a shot that doesn't really get taken. I think guys just kind of stretch it out to three now. But Amari also, like, really good free throw shooter for a guy his size. I think he was, like, above 80% for his career. So maybe that's an area also he can work with the bigs because as we saw last year, free throw shooting was kind of really like an area of weakness for this team. So easy spot to improve maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then do you want to talk about any, you know, other guys that have at least been rumored to be added to this staff? You know, I know D'Antoni has been talked about. Andy has been talked about. If we're just judging by the Rolodex, then, you know, Kurt Thomas is probably going to be getting a call in the next week or two. So I would actually love to see Kurt Thomas. I have no idea what he's up to, but I feel like he belongs somewhere as a coach.
Yeah, that's a good call. In terms of the other two guys you mentioned, Phil Handy and D'Antoni, I think they're both going to be really sought after, particularly Handy. I think he's kind of been a guy who's kind of been around for a while and hasn't really gotten a big opportunity. So maybe he's looking for something a little bigger than just being an assistant coach. D'Antoni, it's really hard to say what he would want, but obviously the fit would be great considering he worked with Nash and with Amari for so long in Phoenix. Those guys obviously have a great relationship. So it would definitely make sense in terms of like a fit and a chemistry. My only concern would be, if you're like undermining Nash at all by bringing in a guy of that caliber, like there's already questions about that with Jacques Vaughn. And, you know, we talked about the comments Kyrie made about how they don't really have a head coach. So I don't know, at a certain point, it maybe does become like a too many cooks in the kitchen kind of situation. And maybe Nash gets drowned out by having like multiple guys around him with head coaching experience, with playoff coaching experience, like things that he just doesn't have yet. So I don't know. There's definitely pros and cons to it. Do you have an opinion on either of those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think on D'Antoni, it's a little, it's like when, I don't even know if this has ever happened before, but I feel like it's a trope in TV shows and movies where you have like the Wonder Kid employee who then just gets promoted above their boss.
Right.
So it's kind of like that. And also like, I mean, Mike D'Antoni's 70 years old, man, you know. If he's not getting a head coaching gig, does he really need the aggravation, especially like in COVID times? You know, I feel like for any of these older coaches, like D'Antoni, you know, and other guys out there, like I was even feeling the same way about, you know, Stan Van, even though he's not super old, like unless you're getting a head coaching job, which obviously Stan did, like you don't need the aggravation. So I feel like D'Antoni, you know, it'd be fun to have him, like the gang's all back together because everyone loves those 7 seconds or less Suns teams. I don't know if we really need it. And then Phil Handy, I actually, you know, I don't know a ton about the guy, but if he has a good resume, obviously a 3-time champion, you know, both with the Lakers this past year, but also with the Raptors as an assistant last year, with Cleveland as an assistant when they won their championship in 2016. So I feel like, you know, just having him guarantees you a shot at least. So I would love to have him there. And then also there's been talks about bringing on an assistant coach from across the river in Royal Ivy, who, you know, I think would be really interesting, you know, also a UT guy. So he and KD have that connection. And I think they're pretty good friends, even though they didn't play at UT at the same time. And he's been a coach for a couple teams. I think he was with Oklahoma City before the Knicks, and he's always been a pretty well-respected guy. I think he's someone that is a head coaching candidate probably over the next 3 to 5 years, because he's a young guy at 38, but, you know, has the New York ties, you know, played at Cardozo High School, grew up in Harlem. So I would love to see Royal Ivy to make the jump to the good side. I feel like it'll be fun to have him there. And he was always, you know, he had no offensive game as a player, but he was a pretty good defender, both from a tools perspective and also just like a get up into the offensive player and really just work hard guy. So I would like to see him there. I feel like he could be a good mentor to some of these veteran guys, and especially just teaching defensive fundamentals.
Yeah, that's a great call. And I think like that skill set really complements what they already have on the coaching staff. Like they don't really have a guy who's like a defensive expert like on the roster or really anywhere. So yeah, I mean, he was all defensive Big 12 a couple of times in college, like you said, kind of a pest and an aggravator. So could really bring a new dimension, I think, to the coaching staff.
Yep. No, for sure. Definitely agree on that. Marcus, anything else on the coaching search before we are rounding out the staff before we get into Caris LeVert?
No, I think I'm good. I'm excited to get into Caris though. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. They've got 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut options. And here are their 6 new ones: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, Cherry Barcia, Lemon Almond Cheesecake, Carrot Cake, Apple Almond Crisp. They sound incredible. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for the keto diet. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off of your next order. Once again, promo code locked on for $10 off at builtbar.com.
Let's do it. Why don't you kick us off? There's certainly a lot to talk about with Caris. If I can't believe, like, I feel like all of the, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly that he had last season, it just feels like it spanned 4 years, like everything else did. But shockingly, it was only one season.
Yeah. I mean, Caris really had like multiple years within this 1 year. I mean, coming out of the gates after his playoff performance against the Sixers in the previous season, there were a lot of expectations, especially with KD out. You know, it was kind of, he was looked at as the guy who could kind of maybe make a jump, maybe make an all-star team this year. And then he got hurt again, like he has done a few times now in his career. He missed 25 games in a 26 game stretch, kind of came back for one and then took another game off and then was back for real. He missed games between mid to early November. The 12th was the first game he missed, and then he didn't come back fully until early January. So almost 2 months that he missed. And so it was hard for him to get into a rhythm. You know, he kind of took a little bit of time to find his form coming back from injury. I know, Josh, you and I have had a lot of conversations about, like, is he actually good? Like, we just see little flashes here and there. And then, like, it seems like anytime he puts together a couple of good games, he gets injured. There was a different situation where he put together a couple of good games and then something happened. That was the pandemic, because he was playing unbelievably in, like, the week right before he almost won Player of the Week. I think Norman Powell got it over him. And I remember being a little frustrated at that, because Caris put together that 51-point game in the overtime comeback win against the Celtics. He had the triple-double against the Spurs in Kenny Atkinson's last hurrah. They beat the Lakers in that game right before the suspension. So once again, it felt like, oh my God, like we were just getting Caris maybe turning a corner. He didn't get hurt, and yet still we had to kind of wait a long time before we could see him again. And then coming back into the bubble, thankfully, he didn't really miss much of a beat. You know, he was a little bit off in that first game against Orlando, just kind of dealing with the double teams and the defensive attention that he had never really gotten in the NBA, just because he was kind of the Nets' only shot creator, like we've talked about, in the bubble. But after that, whether it was, you know, him kind of figuring things out, Jacque Vaughn game planning things a little bit differently, some combination more likely, he figured it out in a big way. He had that incredible game against the Blazers at the end of the bubble seeding games, where he almost knocked them out, almost knocked a red hot Damian Lillard like out of the play-in game. He had 37 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds in that game. Obviously missed that one shot at the end, but really an incredible performance up until that last shot. So he gets props there. And then the Raptors series, I don't know, we can get into it, but it's kind of hard to evaluate just because like the whole situation involving the roster, you know, Joe Harris leaving halfway through the series, just a really tough situation and circumstance for Karras to be asked to perform in. But when you're looking at what he did in the bubble overall, looking at that stretch right before the shutdown, if he's able to stay healthy, which is kind of always the question with him, I really think he maybe found something down the stretch, particularly with his passing. He kind of got a lot more involved on ball. Maybe there's a world where, you know, he's handling the ball and Kyrie and KD are kind of causing havoc off ball, running off pin downs, you know, flaring out. And who knows, maybe he can be kind of the Iguodala style, like not point guard, but sort of facilitating at times. You know, Iguodala had that role with the Warriors. Maybe LeVert can do something similar with Brooklyn. That's a lot I just threw at you, Josh. But what did you think of Karras's year?
Yeah, I mean, I think to start out with, I think he has somehow like managed the best PR that totally outside he is as a player. Because if you look at like the statistical profile, it's really, really not good. I mean, he's basically just like an inefficient gunner type that, you know, has masqueraded himself as someone who is a really good all-around player, but that's really not the case. And obviously, you know, I think folks feel that he has a lot of untapped potential because he's only been in the league, you know, this was his fourth season, and he's always been hurt. So he really hasn't gotten in a groove, but you know, he was a four-year player in college, obviously very injured at Michigan as well, but he's 26 years old. And generally speaking at 26, most guys are, you know, close to who they are fully formed as an NBA player. And for me, like, did he have some great moments being the lead guy? Absolutely. Like, was that 51 point game versus Boston phenomenal? Yes. Was the triple double against the Spurs great? Yes. Was his performance against Lillard and some of the other things he did in the bubble with clutch shots great? Of course. But now looking at this team that has a lot bigger expectations, you know, they're not the plucky underdog that they were even last year when they got the sixth seed and made the playoffs. They're not, you know, what they were this past year. This is a team that basically needs to make the conference finals or it's going to be considered a bust. And you have two Hall of Fame players that are some of the most gifted scorers of all time in Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So it's great that Karras can take 25 shots a game and, you know, against Washington, but what is he going to be doing when this Nets team really has to win and the rubber meets the road? And from what I've seen, I just don't have any sort of faith in that. I mean, he had a 30% usage rate this year and 51% true shooting. That's horrible. You know, for me, it's like he's an okay 3-point shooter. I still think, you know, even though the percentage increased this year, I think that his shot still looks really rushed. I think it looks really smooth and great in practice, but then when he gets in the games, he's just rushing a lot, and that's why he can have a lot of really bad misses. And then when you look at what he did this year, like the trends of his shot charts are going the absolute wrong way. The shots at the rim, you know, he was 31% of all of his field goal attempts were shots at the rim 2 years ago, 32% last year. This year it was 24%. Threes aren't going up either. So when you look at kind of where he's taking his shots, it's all from 3 to 16 feet now. So it was 29% of his field goal attempts, not percentage, attempts 2 years ago, 33% last year, and 41% this past year. And he's not good at hitting those. And especially with, you know, all these guys on the team next year, he's not the ones I would want taking those shots. You know, I want KD or Kyrie taking them, or even Joe Harris. You know, Dinwiddie obviously has a ton of problems in the mid range, so I won't even get into that. But, you know, I just don't see what his role is going to be on a good team, because he's like, he can do a lot of things kind of well if you look close enough, but nothing really well. He doesn't have like one specialty. And I don't think he's a good enough shooter to really get a ton of respect off ball. He's a decent passer, but nothing special. You know, defensively, I think he has the tools, especially to guard point guards on that end, but he hasn't really applied himself that much. And you add it all up, and that he's very injury prone. And when I look at him, he's very, you know, he's considered very valuable around the league. And I think if the Nets do keep him on this team for next year, his reputation and how much he's sought after is really going to decrease. So I think the Nets would actually be best served trying to cash in that chip this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have way more eyeballs on them this year, so that point definitely makes sense. I think the mid-range, like his attempts for mid-range going up, can kind of be explained by just the fact that he played so few games this year, and like a decent chunk of the ones he did play, he was the only option. And so teams are walling him off at the rim. They're not letting him get like wide open 3-point looks. So his shot profile this year, I think, is kind of unique to the circumstances of like the roster.
It was only 6 of the 45 games that were in the bubble, basically like by himself.
Yeah. But like, even like he played 45 games. If you just took his 5 games from March and those 6 bubble games, that's already a quarter of his season was like,
But Dinwiddie was there in March for some of those games.
Yeah. But Karis's role was like a lot more elevated. He's playing like 36 minutes and 37 minutes in some of those games. He's just not going to be asked to do as much, even like when Dinwiddie's there, like, he's still not going to be like the second option on this team next year. He's going to be the third, sometimes fourth, sometimes fifth if Joe Harris is hitting his shots. So,
but with the decreased usage, Marcus, do you think his efficiency is going to really go up? Like, I don't see, like, I don't see it, because it's not like there's one area that he's just excelling. Like, he's an okay shooter at the basket, but not like anything phenomenal. And obviously, he can miss a ton of like easy layups and has a propensity to doing that. He's not a great 3-point shooter. So like, I don't see him as someone that, as his usage scales way down, his efficiency is going to scale way up. I think that's just kind of who he is as a player.
Yeah. I mean, he thrives with the ball in his hand for sure. And I would want to see him contribute more, like not just from a scoring perspective. Like, we saw games where he had the triple double game. Like, he has games where he's getting a lot of rebounds, a lot of assists, like doing other things. You mentioned, he kind of has the physical profile to be a good defender. That's kind of where I would want to see him elevate his game. And so maybe his scoring drops back down to where it was, like in that 14, 15 point range. But if he's able to contribute in those other areas and kind of become the Nets version of Jrue Holiday, so they don't have to trade for him, like, that's kind of where I think his niche would maybe be on this team. And like I mentioned, with that Warrior style offense, if that's what Steve Nash chooses to bring from Golden State, like being that kind of facilitator and like not taking so many shots. So maybe it's not necessarily that his scoring gets more efficient, but he kind of steps up his play in the other areas to make up for the fact that he's not just sort of gunning up shots and getting a bunch of volume.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think I think he can be a good defender, but probably not like extremely impactful, just because like his athletic indicators especially I'm not like super impressed with. And I think he's probably lost a bit of athleticism with all the injuries over the years, even though, you know, some of them are relatively innocuous, like the thumb injury he had.
Josh and I really were getting into it on Karis, so much so that we're actually going to do a part two that will be in your feed tomorrow. We continue the discussion, we get into some trade possibilities, just some ideas that we had of what could improve the Nets and make the team a little bit deeper and more competitive for next season. So be on the lookout for that in your feed tomorrow. And until then, be well. Bye.